fix it and where we're going to in the future. So that's an exciting conversation to be part of. I used to think of pop culture was really trivial, and that if you wanted to talk about the big questions of life, then you would head to maybe, let's hope that bird goes out. James, where's your gun? So I was just saying that I used to find that pop culture was really trivial and shallow, and that, you know, if you want to talk about the greater questions of life, then you head to a church or maybe to philosophical halls and hear lectures or read some of the big books. But there's been a massive shift now. Everyone is talking about those big questions, but they're talking about it in the realm of pop culture. All right, so just before, what we're going to do is actually, I'm going to offer a structure that I reckon is really helpful in breaking down what's going on in any particular pop cultural element so that we can find connection points to move towards the gospel, participate in that big conversation about the meaning of life. So first of all, just a definition with those two words, pop culture. If we look at the word culture first, what we're saying is that culture is all the raw materials of creation, all the natural materials that we as humans fashion into something that represents our view of the world, that represents our tree, the roots and the metastory or the street philosophy that is going on underneath. So that means everything like clothes or a song, music, even architecture, all those things are an expression in some way of the way we view the world, what we find is true, good, beautiful, what needs to be upheld. So it's not the raw materials themselves, like rocks, which God made, but it's more what we actually do with the raw materials. That's what culture is. So we take the rocks and we form something like that at the top of Town Hall in Sydney. As for the pop bit, that just simply means that it's popular. So we're talking about aspects of culture that is accessible to a wide range of people, and lots of people are involved in it, and it's easy to I guess, consume or participate in it. So the difference would be like high culture would be something like the opera, which is quite limited as to who can sort of go there, appreciate it, have access to it. Popular culture is just everywhere, and the venue is really easy to enter into. So that's helpful, that definition. Okay. Another thing I want to talk about is what we as Christians see is going on with pop culture. So if we're thinking that pop culture is the fruit at the top of anyone's tree, our worldview that we get from the Bible actually helps us understand what is going on in pop culture. So the first thing, our worldview from the Bible says that God created everything good. He created the entire world. But he's created it in such a way that every piece of creation is carrying a message that God exists, that he is good, that he is loving. So every piece of creation carries a message. It is broadcasting that God is glorious. And we don't have time to unpack all the verses that I give you, but if you want to read them at another stage, go for it. So Psalm 19 says that very thing, that the start of the psalm, that every piece of creation is broadcasting that God exists. What we do as humans, though, is we take all those elements of creation and we create things that should repeat that message. So when we fashion God's creation, we should be fashioning it in such a way that it highlights the messages of God. It points back to God. But if we look at Romans 1, we know because of the fall, it doesn't quite happen that way anymore. Rather, we fashion creation into things that represent different stories and distort the message that God has in creation, that he is glorious. We even fashion things into, oh no, Twitterbird. Maybe we should shut that door. Shut the door! just so it doesn't happen again. Thanks, Alison. Cool. Right. Yep, so Romans 1 says that man has, although they were put into the position of taming and mastering all of God's creation in such a way that it reflects that God is Lord and He is glorious, we've turned it on its head, and we send out propaganda with all our cultural endeavours. However, despite that being the case, the Bible also shows that it's the messages that we create with the different elements of culture doesn't actually mute God's inherent messages in creation. So although we twist it and we distort it, God still is sending out His messages, so much so, and they're so clear still, that Romans 1 again says that no one has any excuse. So what I'm saying is that although we distort creation, God, in His sovereignty and providence, doesn't allow it to be as bad as it can be, so much so that it actually stamps out the inherent messages that give glory to Him. So there's still a bit of power left in all the creation. And Acts 14:17 is an example of that, where God, where Paul gets up and he says, God is still sending His messages, so much so that we are without excuse. So what that means for us, when we think of a piece of fruit, a piece of pop culture at the top, we're not saying that it's all bad or it's all good. Rather, we see that there's this messy mixture of messages going on. You've got God's messages coming through, and then you've got what we are doing to distort those messages. So any piece of pop culture is a messy mixture that we have to sort of sort out the good from the bad. And that should help us not be too quick to just write something off, because it'd be very easy for us to go, pop culture is bad, therefore I'm not going to engage with it. But if it is true that there are still great messages that God's sending through all of His creation, that gives us lots of connection points to talk about God and talk about what's good and true. So, now, this is in your outline. I've got a... this is a bit of a strategy that I work to in trying to unpack what's going on in a piece of pop culture. So I've worked in radio for a number of years, and even as a Christian, and that's forced me to really think about what is pervasive, really. The fact that everyone is talking about songs and movies and imitating celebrities and wearing clothes, all trying to... enter this world or capture something of this world that's being projected in a piece of pop culture. So I go through five things which I think are really helpful in looking at any piece of pop culture, that fruit at the top of the tree. So the first thing is we need to make sure that whether we're listening to a song or watching a movie or a reality TV show, that we understand what is actually being said. So we've got to really work with the story. We've got to think about what are the characters in the story, even in a song. Who's being sort of portrayed as the protagonist, you know, the hero of the story, the saviour within the story. And then looking at maybe a group of people, or even a force, is being portrayed as the antagonist, so the foe or the villain in the story. The next thing to look at is still just sort of breaking apart a story to just notice what's going on, because remember that our end goal is to actually have conversations with people, so we really want to be talking about the actual text or the pop cultural element in front of us. Is what is the big conflict or barrier that is put up that needs to be jumped in the story? So the hero is heading towards something, they hit a barrier, the foes are coming in and they're sort of really trying to make sure that barrier can't be jumped. But what is it that the, the hero needs to achieve, like the goal or maybe something that they have to learn. And that's where we also look at the theme. So once we know the characters and also the conflict that's going on, you can start to get a taste for the theme or the point of the story by seeing how does the main character change over that time as they face the battle, jump over it, and maybe, you know, come to some sort of resolution. That often gives us a real good insight into the theme. So we'll have a look at how some of these work with some real examples shortly. The next thing is taking notice of how the medium massages the message. So you've probably heard that the medium is the message. You've heard that saying before. I don't think that's quite true. I think the message is the message that someone wants to convey, but they use a medium in order to connect with people. But certain mediums have the ability to massage that message and give a contour to it or emphasize certain things. So if you've got a story in film, you might have certain camera angles or lighting that just sort of emphasize or highlight certain things. And it's worth just taking notice of sort of what world you're inhabiting. If we're in a movie world, what is being sort of given prominence and emphasis? If you're in a song, again, what's sort of the contours of the song and where is it sort of pushing you to have your focus? The next thing is, in any piece of pop culture, if we're saying that God's messages still break through, we want to look at what is good and true and beautiful in any piece of pop culture. So we're after the footprints of God. Is there something that's being seen as a blessing or the idea of grace that, you know, points to something much larger and bigger? And when we're having our conversations, we want to be really sort of, I guess, leveraging those things, because I think that's what helps us avoid just being imposers or judgmental, where we affirm where we can. And if we can think very carefully about those connection points, that's helpful in pushing the conversation forward. But we also need to see that messages are distorted, and so we want to look at the areas that that are ugly, that distort the messages of God. And the places to really sort of zero in on that is looking at, in any story, what is being promoted as salvation. What does salvation look like in the story? Likewise, what does sort of the concept of damnation look like in any story? Usually you'll see that's where the distortions are, where different saviours are being put up, different idols other than Christ himself. And if you can see where the story says this is where redemption or grace is located, we often get an insight as to what's being put at the centre, what is the idol in the story. And if we can be aware of that, that gives us another great connection point with people, because we can say things like, say if money's being put at the centre of this story as the solution, the salvation, we can press home a little bit just through humble questioning. Oh, what do you reckon? Do you think money really does save? Or does it really get you that life that you want? I guess that's sort of shaking the roots a bit, like Michael was saying. Just if we know where to shake the roots, we can do it. In apologetics, I think they call it transcendental arguments. So I use an easier term called taking the roof off, which is just trying to ask questions around things that help people push the logical entailments of things further. I think that's really helpful, looking where grace is being located in the story. And then the last thing is we want to then see how does the gospel apply here. So the questions, those deep questions that are being posed in any piece of pop culture, how does the gospel really answer those things? Showing people through the course of a conversation that the resolution is tied to God. I should just say at this point, both with what Michael was saying, what I am saying here. It's very easy to think that we're just advocating a really clinical approach to conversations. You know, just do this template, do these things, and you'll end up with gospel conversations. What we're saying is, if we just take a little bit more time to think into these things, through the course of conversations and a journey in friendship, we can just unpick a little bit, just probe a little bit further, and just keep scratching, looking for when we might get a more bolder opportunity to go deeper into conversations. And I know you guys have been raising that in some of the questions. And we also want to show that the gospel, although it is a core thing, you know, a man 2,000 years ago, God as a man, died on the cross for our sins, it's not a small thing. It actually has massive implications. So yes, we get reconciled to God, but a lot of the great desires that people have are resolved in the gospel. The other thing I want to say is that when you get a really good piece of pop culture, usually the reason why it is working is because it is tapping into those fundamental and good desires that we want, such as like we want justice in a situation, or we really do want love. So usually the better pieces are actually, you know, offering those real things that we want, but it's distorting it and locating the solution in something other than ultimately Jesus. So, what we're going to do now, who's seen Life of Pi? Excellent. That's good, because I was hoping that there'd be enough people here. What I want us to do is to just briefly work through in your outline. We want to, maybe sort of, what I'll do is I'll just briefly go through the story, very briefly, for people who haven't seen Life of Pi, so that we can attempt to answer some of these questions. So you've got this young boy, Pi. He's in India, and he's growing up in a zoo. So his family run a zoo, and he sort of goes on this quest as a real young teenager as to what is the meaning of life and where is God in all these things. And there's this profound moment when he, as an older man, is reflecting back. I think he's telling a Canadian novelist his whole story, and he sets up the story saying, I'm going to tell you a story that will make you believe in God. So he's reflecting on it, and he starts off saying how he has journeyed through many religions. I'll play a clip.
Every Hindu said amen. Catholic Hindus do.
Catholic Hindus?
We get to feel guilty before hundreds of gods instead of just one.
But you're a Hindu girl.
None of us knows God until someone introduces us. I was first introduced to God as a Hindu. There are 33 million gods in the Hindu religion. How can I not come to know a few of them? I met Krishna first.
യശോദ ഒരു കാലം കുട്ടി കൃഷ്ണമേ ചെല്ലമ്മ തെറ്റത് ചേച്ചി കുറുമ്പ് പൈ അഴുക്കുവായിലെ കൂട്ടിക്കാലേ.
The gods were my superheroes growing up. Hanuman, the monkey god, lifting an entire mountain to save his friend Lakshman. Ganesh, the elephant headed, risking his life to defend the honor of his mother Parvati. Vishnu, the supreme soul, the source of all things. Vishnu sleeps floating on the shoreless cosmic ocean, and we are the stuff of his dreaming.
Spectacle. Don't let these stories and pretty lights fool you, boys. Religion is darkness.
My dear Appa believed himself part of the new India. As a child, he had polio. He used to lie in bed racked with pain, wondering where God was. In the end, God didn't save him. Western medicine did. My amma went to college and thought her family was part of the new India as well, until her parents cut her off because they thought she was marrying beneath her.
Her religion was the only link she had to her past.
God so loved this world that he gave his only son.
The longer I listened to the priest, the more I came to like this son of God.
Thank you, Vishnu, for introducing me to Christ.
I came to faith through Hinduism, and I found God's love through Christ. But God wasn't finished with me yet. God works in mysterious ways. And so it was, he introduced himself again, this time by the name of Allah. My Arabic was never very good, but the sound and feel of the words brought me closer to God. In performing Salah, the ground I touched became holy ground, and I found a feeling of serenity and brotherhood.
This lamb is exquisite. This best dish on the table. You're all missing out. You only need to convert to 3 more religions, Piscin, and you will spend your life on holiday.
Are you going to Mecca this year, Swami Jesus? Or to Rome for your coronation as Pope Pius?
You stay out of this, Ravi. Just as you like cricket, Pius has his own interests.
No, Gita. Ravi has a point, no? You cannot follow 3 different religions at the same time, Piscin.
Why not?
Because believing in everything at the same time is the same as not believing in anything at all.
He's young, Santosh. He's still finding his way.
I do not expect us all to agree about everything, but I'd much rather have you believe in something I don't agree with than to accept everything blindly. And that begins with thinking rationally. You understand? Good.
All right, so it's an extended clip, but it's such a profound moment in the movie. It's what the whole movie hinges on. And so, I chose a movie that I assumed is quite a few years old now, so most people have seen it, so sorry for any spoiler here, okay? But for the sake of the exercise, so what happens next is that his father packs up his entire zoo and family to move to Canada, and while they're on the ocean with the animals, there's a big shipwreck. And it works out that Pi, the young boy, is the only one that survives, and a couple of animals. And so he's on this lifeboat, and then this tiger he sees swimming, which at first he thinks is a survivor in the water, so he paddles over, and then, boom, this Bengal tiger, which I think he calls Richard Parker, pops up on the boat. And you get this toing and froing for how is this vicious tiger and this young boy going to survive on this boat? And he coaxes the tiger into some sort of trust. Then there's an orangutan and a hyena. It's quite crazy at some points. But the whole journey is, how do these guys survive? And then when they eventually make it to the coast of Mexico, the older Pi recounts telling the story to the insurers who have come to ask about the boat, what happened. And so Pi recounts the entire story, and they come back and say, well, we don't believe that. That sounds crazy. And he goes, okay, well, I'll tell you another story, at which the story is extremely brief, and he talks about how actually he, his mother, a cook, and someone else survived, and you know they ended up fighting, and there was cannibalism on the lifeboat, and eventually it was only Pi who survived. And then he said, well, which story of those two, he says to the insurers, which story of those two would you like to choose? And they said, which story do you think is better? And the insurers go, oh, well, the one with the tiger in it. And he goes, well, so it is with God. So that's sort of the overall map of the story. Let's just fire off quickly for want of time. How would you go about, especially maybe the people who have seen it are probably a bit more informed here. How would you... Yeah, sure. But you can go off that clip as well. How would you go looking for, say, let's break down the story a fraction. Who would be the protagonist in the movie? The hero? Pike. Pike. Okay, and why do you say that? Yep. The name of the book, yep. Sorry, what? Yep. He's on a journey, on a quest. Yep. Good stuff. What about the antagonists? Who would be the antagonists in the movie?
Tiger.
Yep, the tiger. And maybe the tiger also represents something a bit larger as in... Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Antagonist, yep, that's right. Or maybe even the tiger represents this chaotic world of forces that are just harmful, like he's floating on the water with a tiger and he's only just survived, and then his only chance of survival means he's got to carry this tiger on board as well.
So the bit important is the transaction with the tiger in the zoo to understand that too.
Absolutely, yep. So there's lots of sort of building up to it. What would you say is the major conflict that the story has set up? You might... Yep. So there's... Yep, that's right. There's that... I need to survive this tragedy. So that's probably an internal conflict. Oh, sorry, an external conflict. There's an internal conflict going on as well, which is actually driving the story. Yeah. Yeah. So he's gone on this quest through all these different religions. Which one is going to help him survive the world that he finds himself in? So what? Have a go at maybe summarizing. How would you summarize the overall theme or the point of that story? Yep. So you said that it's so unbelievable, but it just might be possible. Yep. Okay. A search for truth. Yep.
Just. Life is a pie, then you die.
Very good. And.
There are many truths, and you just choose the one that makes you happiest.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Just believe. Mm. See, I wondered that too. If it was a what version of reality is your preference that helps you cope with life, whatever life throws at you, then you take on the story that's going to help you survive. Okay, what would you say was sort of good? Were there any sort of fragments of God's goodness that popped up in the movie that you could identify with?
Mm.
Yep. So he's got his hand on one of his Hindu gods and he thanks that god for getting to Christ, yes, but he's actually thankful. And that's the point, you know. Dave.
Quest for truth.
Is a good search.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I actually thought that was a grace moment, because there's a moment where he can get rid of the tiger and kill, but then he's built this relationship and he shows grace to this animal that's been threatening him by saving him and inviting him back onto the lifeboat. So you see a notion of grace at that point. That's true, yeah. So if you know the story, they fall on an island and the tiger takes off.
Also, cinematically
Mm. Yep. Mm. So that's a great observation of looking at the contours of the world that this piece is asking you to inhabit and how it emphasises different things. So Colin was saying, you look at Pi's journey and it points, it's so colourful and bright and fanciful and it's just surreal. But then if you reflect on what it was like for him as a kid, you've sort of got these staid old religions. So is the techniques of the movie somehow saying that religion has evolved, you know, from there to what Pi would actually say is the way? Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, you know, that's another point. There is a God has given us rationality, and that can be a good thing as well. So let's move on to what about what's ugly and distorted?
Mm.
Hmm. Yep. That seems to promote an integration, hey, that one just leads to the other. Yep. Hmm. Yep. Yep. So what is stated by the father is actually portrayed in the cinematography, that all religion is darkness. Yeah. Dave.
It feels like it arrives at a point where it denies that there is a truth, bizarre, a preference.
Yep.
Relativism.
Mm. And that preference is grounded in what, whatever helps you cope. Yep. All right, so... Okay, we'll move on. And what about... What's some connections through to the gospel? How does the gospel resolve some of the questions that are posed in that film? Yep. Yep. So if you find yourself on a lifeboat with a tiger, you've just lost your family, the only glimmer of life happens to be threatened every waking moment, you would start to say, well, what's the point? Is this really all there is? And there's this great moment where Pi actually gives himself to God, whoever that God is. But, yeah. So that's that points to something greater, that even in the midst of chaos... you can give yourself over to a higher power that will help. Any other thoughts?
There's a explanation of faith, isn't it? Like, when you mentioned Matthew, one of the things we looked at was that, this is the way it says, have faith, trust in me, have faith.
Mm.
I never loses faith in that movie. Like, obviously, he's unclear where it lies.
Yep. All right, good comment. Okay, we'll move on to one more example which we all can participate in. We'll fly a lot faster through this, but have you heard this song by Pharrell Williams? So listen closely to the lyrics.
Here come bad news, talking this and that.
It's a very fun and infectious song, isn't it? So just turn into groups, and I want you to try and unpack that. I'll put the lyrics up, right? So we'll just spend a few minutes. So you'll probably have to burn through this just so that we cover off. So don't go too deep. But yeah, turn into groups of four or five, and then we'll report back. All right, so on Friday I printed out the lyrics and made a few jottings with my little grid, so let's compare notes. Okay, so anyone want to just have a crack at just unpacking what the general gist of the story in the song is? Go, Pete. Keep going.
And if you hold on to that happiness, you know, nothing can hurt you as long as you keep that level of happiness and you won't take on anyone else's negativity.
Yep.
Can't bring me down.
Can't bring me down. So there is some barrier going on. Yep. Yep. So is there any antagonist that sort of comes up? Bad news. Yep. There seems to be some person in the background, especially like verse 2, here comes bad news talking this and that. There's some person in the background that's trying to take away his happiness, whether that's a force or whether it's an actual person. Yep. And he's on this quest to find happiness and actually jump over these barriers that are occurring. Yeah.
Mm.
Good observation. Yeah. So some of the scenarios that you find these people dancing in, you know, I think there was one that implied poverty or just menial tasks. So, you know, there are those barriers to jump over. It's like the world that people find themselves in is conspiring against them. Mm. American middle class. A choice. Yep. Mm. So that would be maybe the theme. He has learnt that you choose to dance, kind of thing. And that's his street philosophy. You could say whatever makes you happy is the street philosophy that captures some kind of big story and those deep roots that's going on for him. All right, so what about the contours of the world? How would you describe what's portrayed? What sort of world do you enter, and how is it emphasised or underlining certain things? Yeah.
I want to feel like that more.
Yeah. It's pretty, it was ordinary. Yeah. There seemed to be like I wondered if some of the pictures that you had, people dancing by themselves with the world actually at a distance, there was quite a bit of space between them dancing in happiness versus the world outside. And that sort of emphasised, I guess, an isolation that's real, but what you can do in the middle of it. You can dance in the middle of your isolation. But yet, there was, if you listen to the style of music, which is described as Motown, I'll just play that in the background. If you listen to it, it's got that neo-soul that really was born out of black people's oppression in America, which, so they are fighting against a world that is pressing in on them, and one of the ways that they got through it was to dance, and they had this real joy in their life. In fact, the world would shackle them But yet, these are the guys that actually dance with their whole body. And the music is all about expressing bodily movement. And it's a call and response kind of thing, isn't it? Neo-soul is all about an invitation. Someone sings a line and the other people respond. So even the contours of the music, I felt, had emphasised this invitation. Come into our world. Come and participate. Go. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, let's move on. What's distorted and ugly? So just say that a bit louder because I don't think people would have heard that. Yep. There's almost an arrogance in the statement when you, if you just sing it and you don't, and you sing it so large that it's actually your worldview, just be happy. You can choose happiness. People cannot choose happiness. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Hadn't heard that. Yep. Okay. Lois. That's right. So you're starting to see footprints of God's good gift of happiness,
yeah.
And the ability to, to some degree, some capacity, choose to be happy.
Well, that might be right as a fact, but the scenario there was the way that he maintained that is by just blocking the world and its cares and the truth and everything else out.
Mm. Yep.
And I think that's pretty phony and destructive, and it ain't typical of.
Yep. Yep. Darren, you were going to say something. Yep. Sure. Yep. Yep. Sure. Anthony, last one. Yeah. Last one with Anthony. Very unrelatable.
Unrelatable. I mean, I think people want to be in that spot. Right?
Yep.
It's much the same line. You know, I think it's fairly well known that people in the poorest of nations like Africa are happy. And we can't understand why.
Yep.
So it's the same kind of
education. All right, we're going to have to pull up stumps there just because we've got to move on to something else. Sorry, Kathy. One word. Psalms? Yeah, right, okay. You'll have to explain that to me later, what you mean. Sorry. So I wanted to show that that every piece of pop culture is actually projecting a world, and there's a larger story going on. And sometimes what might seem might not seem bad is actually deep down promoting something that isn't that helpful long term. So often we're quick to go, Disney movies are fine. You know, a song like this, it is just it is a fun song, and it is a fun song. You can sing along to it, but it does play into this bigger meta story that Michael was talking about underneath, just reinforcing things. And if you're familiar with Pharrell Williams, there's a larger context with him. So he's in this song singing, "Whatever makes you happy, go do it." Well, you listen to some of his other songs that he's written. One of them was extremely controversial last year, called Blurred Lines, and it borders on rape language. So you open up the larger context for this guy, and he's saying, whatever makes you happy. You know, you've just got to realise, you know, people go, oh yeah, Pharrell Williams, I really enjoy that, get the kids into it, then kids buy the album. You've got to listen to the entire story that's going on. So what might just seem trivial and fun has a lot more of that, those roots going on underneath. But conversely, you know, before we quickly say, oh, something's dirty and distorted and a rotten piece of fruit, there's so many connection points that we can draw out in the context of relationships. And I think by being familiar with this stuff gives us more of that humility. We can actually talk to people, and it's not a power play where you come in, right, I'm going to talk about my root system and you're going to listen. You're just having a conversation.